Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. Listen live as we discuss the Punch TV Studios IPO 2.0, funding for your film, acting in film and television, new affiliate stations, and all things Punch TV Studios. Meet the stars of your favorite Punch TV Studios film and television shows and find out how you can be a part of the company that is revolutionizing media. Call 657-383-1974 and join in on the conversation. And now your host, Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO, Mr. Joseph Collins. I am your co-host, Sharifa Hardy, and as always, we are going to have an amazing show today. Our guest today promises to bring the information and guidance that some of our listeners need. Before we introduce our guest and get started on today's show, I would love to introduce my other two co-hosts, A Bottle of You and A Bottle of You for Me. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. It's a lovely show.
Yes. What's going on? What's new? Tell me something good.
Well, I came across this young lady that we're going to have today. She's doing great things for the community for domestic violence and suicide prevention. She just got back from London giving some very much needed information to the people in London about domestic violence. And she just wrote a book about it to give them resources, which I think is just wonderful. When I saw her work, I had to beg her to be on our show today.
Well, you know, I'm going to go with the beg her to be on the show because I feel the spirit of love. You know, I usually don't beg people to be on the show, but I got you. I'm with you. I thank you. I appreciate you. So that's a wonderful introduction, so I don't even have to say much. I'm going to bring our guests on, but before I do, as always, if you are listening to this show live and you want to listen live, that's fine. But if you have a question, a comment, and you just want to jump into the punch bowl, please press 1 so we know you want to join the conversation. If you're listening to this show on your computer and you want to join us in the punch bowl, please feel free to give us a call at 657-383-1974. Again, that number is 657-383-1974, and press 1 to know we want to join the conversation. This show is going to be amazing. I know, I feel it in my spirit, but anytime we talk, we had a guest the other day where we discussed, I think that was Sean, right? Or no, it was the other lady, but we discussed suicide, and that was such an emotional show, so I just know this show is going to be emotional as well. So you don't want to miss it. You want to tune in, text your friends, post it on Facebook, put it on LinkedIn, send out a tweet, whatever you have to do, this show is a do not miss show. And so with that lovely introduction that Mrs. A Bottle of You for Me gave us, we want to introduce Ms. Christy Johnson, president and founder of Finding Your Destiny, Inc. Christy Johnson, founder of Finding Your Destiny, Inc., a nonprofit domestic violence and suicide prevention organization. Good morning, Mrs. Johnson. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I am doing excellent. This is such a wonderful day, and I appreciate the great introduction, and I just love the work you guys are doing, and I believe that so much is going to come out of your work as well as me being on the show and just talking about saving life and preventing deaths due to domestic violence, as well as those that are caused by suicide. So I believe that that this is such a great work and just so much is going to come out of it that people around the world are going to know and feel that they are worthy and they can do better, they can live better, and they can want better. And there is nothing wrong with that. We just have to help you recategorize all your goals and wants and needs and how you can stay safe to fulfill your destiny.
Absolutely. Amen. So is that what your organization does, help people with that?
Yes, most definitely. Our number one goal is to make sure that every victim of domestic violence understand what domestic violence is, and also that it is not their fault. Domestic violence is not caused by them, and so they are not responsible for any person's behavior or out-of-control attitude and anger. So it does not have anything to do with the victim. It's always the abuser's fault for what they do.
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, amen. And I'm glad that you brought that up and pointed that out because it's been my experience. I know people always talk about, oh, well, people don't want to report domestic violence. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to get their husband in trouble. I mean, I think that's very common. But I think what I want to focus on and what has been my experience is that people tend to look at domestic violence at an extreme. And what I mean by that is people will say, okay, leave if he tries to shoot you or leave if he then beat you 15 times. But there are so many different levels of domestic violence and abuse that people take every day that is abuse but is not abuse in the extreme. Has that been your experience?
Oh, yes, most definitely. When people look at domestic violence, most of them look at it as the physical abuse where they've been physically touched by beatings, which includes black eyes, busted lips, knocked out teeth, or a extremity has been broken, such as an arm or leg or feet or, you know, something in that type of category. But domestic violence also includes the sexual assault or violence. It also has to do with the mindset where they are degrading and breaking your mindset, which includes psychological, emotional abuse. And so with there being so many forms of domestic violence, my organization focuses on all of it, because we believe in healing the whole person, not just the black eye, because we don't want you covering that with makeup, because there are things that you're supposed to do to help your face heal properly. That's why when we look at so many victims of domestic violence, the ones that you can just look at their face and you can see all the blackness around their whole eye, it's because it has been improperly treated. And that's due because the victim is so afraid to go out and seek that medical care that's needed, they just cover it up with makeup. And so we unmask everything. And when you look in the mirror after being touched by me and working with me, you see a whole new person.
Right, but you have to get to the root of the problem, because so many people who are in domestic violence situations, they don't even know that, you know, they are being abused or this is abuse and that they don't have to take it. So they cover it up, they cover up the makeup, they try to, you know, hide it. And but you can just see their spirit. I mean, you can see their spirit. That's what, you know, I think personally, more than, you know, anything else, they break their spirit, you know, in order to have that person stay and put up with the abuse. And I've been married and divorced twice, and I always talk about that, but I never really talk about my marriages and why I was divorced so many times. And my children's father, I have two children, their father, he was abusive. I don't care how many people love him and support him and everything, but he was abusive. And I was like, okay, wait a minute, hold on. I don't take this. Like, That's not who I am. Whoever you dealt with or whatever, maybe they take it, but I don't take it. Now, he wasn't a violent person. He never struck me or he never hit me, but whenever I would try to talk about our marriage, our life or whatever, this man would blow spit bubbles in my face. He would sing Barney songs and just do a whole bunch of stuff that, to me, at least, and that was what mattered, was abusive. He would take off for the weekend and be gone. And I was like, okay, how do you leave a wife and two children at home and not even call? And he's like, well, if anything happened to me, my mother will call you. And I said, okay, time to go. Time to go. I took that as an abusive situation where I wasn't being put first and I was ready to go.
Well, most definitely that was abusive, and a lot of people don't look at that as being domestic violence because he wasn't physically touching you, but he was emotionally breaking you down day by day. And when you can't emotionally care for someone that you're married to, then that is a number one major problem when it comes to men who are violent, because they are emotionally damaged. They don't know what love is. They don't know how to love. And when you are standing up for yourself and speaking up, hey, I'm not feeling protected in this marriage. I'm not feeling safe. I'm not feeling loved. I'm not feeling wanted. Then they don't want to hear that, because now what you're doing is now you're bringing the attention to what they're doing, and they don't want to hear it. And any time you leave your wife and children and you're gone for days and days and days, that's abuse as well. That's not only categorized as domestic violence, but that is also family abuse and emotional abuse on a family, because you're worried, you don't know where they're at. And then, yes, what if something would have happened to him and, you know, his mother? That is crossing the line, number one. His mother should not even be in your marriage in that type of situation. That's why when I speak to women, I always tell them that you don't want a mama's boy. You want a man.
Yes. Preach, sister. Yes. No, because, and you know, I always have these great conversations, and I'm a very happy person, so people take things lightly sometimes, and I don't take domestic violence lightly. But when I try to explain some of the things that he would do to people, people just like, oh, that's just him. And I'm like, no, this behavior is not okay. It's not all right. And you know what? It may be acceptable for someone else, but I love me. My problem is I love the hell out of me. Like, you know, I'd be married 15 times if I had to, because if you know what I mean, you gonna have to treat me right. And what I learned is that I make better decisions going in now, but nobody can tell me that this man was not abusive. Nobody can tell me that he wasn't abusive in his behavior and in his treatment of his wife. And even the final straw that broke up our marriage, when I just said, you know what, I'm done, it was such a simple thing to most people, and everybody else was like, I can't believe you divorced him because he did that. And it's a long story, but I'm going to try to make this long story short and try not to monopolize your whole hour. But what had happened was I went to get my hair done, and it was a new beautician. And you know how we women, we try to make friends with our beautician and we start talking to them or whatever. So I showed her a picture of my family. And she looked at the picture and she said, that's Tiki. And that's my ex-husband, my kid's father's nickname. And she said, that's Tiki. And I said, how do you know my husband? And she said, oh, he's always at the strip club. So I said, no, my husband don't go to the strip club. And she was like, yes, he does. That's Tiki. And I was like, but how do you know that he goes to the strip club? And she said, because I do hair and I also a stripper. So every time that I'm at the strip club, he's there. So I went home and I asked him what happened. He told me, and excuse my language on the air, but he told me, I'm a grown-ass man. I could go anywhere that I want to go. I said, okay, well, let me get the divorce papers. So I had to explain to him that the problem was not even that you were at the strip club. The problem was I had to find out from the stripper, and the stripper know your name. Like, I'm cool. I'm cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just me?
No, and I commend you on that. You took a really big action that so many women are so afraid of taking, and I am so glad that you understood your self-worth and you understood that you wanted love and you needed to be loved in so many more different and wonderful ways, because a lot of abusers do hang around strip clubs, and what they do at those strip clubs, as most men do, they buy, you know, prostitutes, and they
mm-hmm.
have various relations with these prostitutes. And so they will use all of that internal supposed to be gratification that they're supposed to have for you with a stranger, with someone who's dressing provocative, someone who's having sex for money, you know, someone who's doing activities that a good wife is not doing. And so
right.
when you have that type of relationship that is broken and that marriage that does not mean anything, I'm so glad you got out, because
thank you.
A lot of women will stay and they will continue to have kids and kids and kids by the same
mm-hmm.
broken man.
Yes.
The same
yes.
broken man. And then they will end up with various STDs. And then you
mm-hmm.
know what will start to happen then? That's when the physical
mm-hmm.
violence will occur, because now he
mm.
wants to blame you. He wants to have another
right.
focus of blaming someone for his actions, of him getting the STDs, of him cheating, of him degrading you as a wife, of him lusting and putting his supposed to be experience and gratification for you into another woman who end up being a stripper who has STDs. So I'm so glad that you did exactly what your mind told you. And this is what I speak about when I talk to women about, always go with your gut instinct. Never
mm-hmm.
second guess that. Never second
yes.
guess it. Because
yes.
you have to understand, and that's why I create so many various programs through my organization. And one is called Destiny's Love. And
mm-hmm.
I created this for the middle schools, high schools, and the colleges and universities that I am a part of. And the
mm-hmm.
focus on this, Destiny's Love, is self-love, self-worth,
mm-hmm.
self-defense, and self-awareness. And the reason
mm-hmm.
why there's self-defense included in this, because you have to defend yourself no matter what it takes. You have to become your own self-advocate, because I'm
mm-hmm.
telling you, you can have the best friend in the world. She can know you being beaten and dragged and busted up, broken bones and limbs and all other things. She's not going to report it. She's not going to stand up for you and tell you to get out. So you have to defend yourself at every point you get.
Absolutely. That's why I love, two of my favorite movies are Julia Roberts, Sleeping with the Enemy, and Jennifer Lopez, Enough. I love those movies, you know, but one of the things that you touched on is just really trusting yourself and your gut. Like I tell people about my kid's father, my ex-husband, he has a daughter that's 9 months younger than the day I walked out, and found out later all the stuff that he was up with different people and his baby mother. But I tell people that I honestly, aside from those things that I mentioned, I didn't have a clue. This is back in the days of pagers and all that stuff. I wasn't going through his pager. I wasn't going through his clothes. I was so in the dark, because I didn't know what he was up to. But what I did know is my spirit told me he ain't right. So this ain't right. And the one thing that I've always taught for my parents, and the one thing that I've always done, is I trust me. I trust my feelings. I trust when somebody is giving me something where I'm like, this don't work for me. You know, it may work for somebody else, but this situation doesn't work for me. And I'm okay
yes.
with that.
Yes, yes, yes. And as you continue to learn more and more and more about domestic violence, about warning signs, about various men, about their actions and how they talk, you will become a woman that can spot them across the room because because you are.
I can now, though. I can.
Because your radar now, your radar knows that you can spot them, you can smell them, you can, and sometimes I go into taste because I tell women, I say, you can taste when a man is not good and when he's nasty. And when you get that nasty taste in your mouth and you feel like you need to vomit and spit it up, that means that you need to run as fast as you can. Go brush your teeth and get out and don't never return.
Amen. Amen. But,
yeah.
But that's the same thing that I tell women, though, is that my friends, especially friends, relatives, whoever they are, I tell them, you really only have one time to call me with a problem. Whatever it is in your marriage or your relationship, if you call me and you tell me this guy, this dude, he ain't no good, he cheated on me, he did all of this stuff, and I tell them, today is August 31st. From this day forward, you've seen him. He's shown you who he is. Moving forward is up to you to live with the choices and the decisions that you make. You can't call me every Friday telling me he ain't no good because we knew that last Friday.
Yeah. And then, you know, all of that does go back into a woman's self-worth. And a lot of women, they will self-gratify for what their man is doing to make their self feel better or to just throw it in the back of their mind because they don't want to focus on it and they don't want to see the real. And that's what causes a lot of breakdown in our own self-worth and our own self-motivation is because we don't want to see the truth because we're so stuck on, oh, no, he loved me. Oh, no, no, I want to be with him. Well, you know, it don't matter because, he come home to me at night. All of that stuff right there, I think that is the most senseless thing that a female can say because you don't want a man who is not with you. You should be his number one priority. He should treat you as God's gift. And if he can't love you just like God loves you, that is the wrong man.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I tell people that, see, my problem, especially being in Los Angeles, California, you could just do a Google, and Google will tell you how many men is in Southern California. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay, if you don't want to do it, then I know there's a good man out there. That's why when I see good men, like a bottle of youth, and again, my parents, even though they're divorced, they were married for years. And my dad never let my dad took, they divorced now, but he took care of my mother. He always put her first, no matter what he did on the outside. My mother never pumped gas. My mother never washed her car. My mother never did anything that was remotely close to something that a handyman would do. And it wasn't her. My mother never even had to ask. My dad was always, let me do for you. Let me take care of for you, cooking, buying, you know. So I'm used to people who put their family first. So for me, a man who doesn't put his home first, you know, if nothing else, that's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. The home, the kids, the family has to be the priority. And then my second marriage, he was a nice guy. I just got married too soon after the first one, and I should have just taken some time for me and the children and healed, and that's what I had to do as an adult. So now, even though I'm not married, the man I'm with now, we've been together for 9 years. And I tell people when I met him, I actually met him on blackpeoplemeet.com. And the reason why I went on there is because I wanted to get out the house. I wanted to have some fun. And so I lined up dates. My friends called me 50 first dates. Like, I would go on a first date of this guy, and he ain't going to go nowhere, so I go on another date. I had dates Monday through Friday. Saturday I had 2 dates. Sunday I had 2 dates. And then I met this guy, and for 9 years I've been trying to get this guy to do something wrong so I can go back on another date, but he won't. He's like, you're not going nowhere. You're staying right here. I'm like, damn it, do something. Beat me or something because I need to go back on a new date. Sorry, I got distracted.
Yeah, you know, that is a great story, and I like how you go into details with, you know, you would go on various dates, and you could pick up and feel that, okay, well, and this guy, you know, he's not worth it. You know, this is not going to go anywhere. And so, you know, you go on to the next one. But I like that you didn't put so much time, attention, and focus into the bad ones until mm-hmm. you met the good one. And so that's what is so good about your story, is that you picked up on it immediately and you just moved mm-hmm. on. And so if we could get a lot of women, and especially, well, you know, it's kind of different for teens, but if we could get them as well to get that inner instinct and to know what they're worth and know what they want and to feel that, okay, no, and he's not the one. I'm not going to focus on him. I'm not going to waste my time. I'm not going to date him for 2 or 3 months, and then I get emotionally caught up and get drained mm-hmm. into something that's not even worth it. Then in the mm-hmm. long run, it becomes harder for you to break that cycle mm-hmm. because when he either breaks up with you or throw you out or do something, and then you feel now, okay, it's time for me to leave, now you all messed up. So, you know, if mm-hmm. you do finally get that good one, then you don't know how to treat that good one because your focus was so focused on that damaged one, to where now the things that you should be focused on in the good one, such as having a good loving relationship, understanding each other, be emotionally attached to each other, loving each other properly, learning how to have that special body language, you know, learning how to, you know, for example, go out on a date once a month, or, you know, twice a month, or you know, do some dating activities in the relationship, do movie nights, you know, he cook for you or you cook for him, you know, something special that keeps the mm-hmm. it keeps the enticement going. Because, you know, when you focus so much on the bad, when the good mm-hmm. come, you are lost.
You're confused.
That good one will leave because now he thinks, you know, as some men now be like, oh, man, you know, she's a bee. You know, she doing this, mm-hmm. she doing that. She always arguing. You know, she think I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And that type of mindset would damage the perfect relationship. And so mm-hmm. And that's why God has been so great with me and my organization, because a lot of people don't know this about me, but when my mother had me when she was 14, and so mm-hmm. at the time that my mother found out that she was pregnant with me, her mother beat her with a mop. And so she had beat her so bad to where she tried to murder me in my mother's womb. Mm-hmm. And so from that type of beating and damage, my mother was bleeding for a very long time. It's a blessing to God, you know, that she didn't miscarry with me. And so from that beating that my mother had endured, it had broken and damaged her womb. And so I talk about broken wombs, damaged wombs, when I meet with women and men, because I want them to understand where they come from and why there's such a disconnect with either their mother or father or just women in general. And so the reason why I brought that up is because the relationship with my mother is so strained to where when I speak with her, it's like I am the mother and she's the child, which is so totally mm-hmm. backwards. But it happened in her childhood because her mother was violent and abusive. So her mother mm-hmm. beat her father. And so when wow. I grew up in that household, because when I was 3 days old, my grandmother took me from my mother. And so I grew up in a volatile household where I'm watching domestic violence occur every day. I'm mm-hmm. also being physically abused as well. So So, you know, I was beaten every day. I'm like, every day, every day, every day. I didn't do anything.
Wow.
I didn't say anything. It didn't matter. It was just a day of violence. And so she would unplug the TV because back in the 80s, you could unplug the extension cord that was on the TVs. And so she would unplug that thing and beat me with that hot extension cord. And so I used to get beaten every day for 18 years. And so that's why when I left, I said that I would never live in that house again. I don't even go to that same state where I was raised in because the violence was so terrible that it hurts my skin and my soul. And so I also lived in house for 18 years with a sexual predator, which was my mother's brother. And so he also tried to sexually assault and rape me. And so I had to fight him. And at that time, I could have been about 14 or 15. And so I'm fighting a grown man to keep him off of me. But with every strength that I had in me, I did not let him take my body. And so I told him that if he don't get off of me, that I'm calling 911 and I'm pressing charges on him myself. And so I had to learn as a child how to be my own self-advocate. And so throughout my whole childhood, I had to stand up for myself, had to fight for myself. Even when I told my volatile, abusive grandmother that her son tried to rape me, she looked at me like she didn't care, like she didn't even know who I was, basically like she didn't even hear me talking to her. So I told her the same thing. I said, well, I'm letting you know that if he touched me again in any type of way, that I'm calling 911 and I'm pressing charges. But, you know, after that, you know, he never touched me again. But you could believe that I was every name in the book. I was this, I was that, I looked like this. You know, he don't like me, he can't stand me. But see, what it was is that when you stand up against violent abusers, which is what he still is, they don't like that. And so they will lash out and try to break you down in any way that they can. And so from my childhood of living in those type of volatile situations, when I met my husband, because I met my husband online as well, and my husband was active duty military when I met him. And so when I met my husband, I told him, I said, one thing about me, I don't believe in domestic violence. I said, so this is what I'm not going to accept, and this is what I will accept. So if you're not the man who's going to love me the way that I need to be loved and take care of me and give me the things that I'm telling you that I need, then you need to roll on. So my husband looked at me, and he said, well, I am that man. And so we've been together ever since. And so, you know, I can't get rid of mine either. But the thing about it is that when they see a strong woman and they know that you understand your self-worth and your love and you're not going to take a lot of bull crap and they're not going to be abusive and violent, they're not going to call you names or put you down, they're not going to be allowed to go out and cheat and come back, then they treasure that because they know if I mess up, then I'm going to lose this precious treasure that I've been given. And so they feel like that they won something. And when you win and you win and you win, you don't want to lose.
No, I agree. But let me just add to that. I agree with you 1,000%. But I just want to add to that, the other thing that happens to the man, or actually to you, is that you not afraid to lose. And so because you don't stay in that situation, you find that man for you, or that man, like they say, he who finds a wife finds a good thing. So you're available for him to find you, because the guy that I'm with for 9 years, or I've been with for so long, we kind of have a similar story that I still laugh about to this day, and I'm excuse the listeners, and I probably shouldn't do this at work, but I will. But we had so much fun together. And he was like, for even before we really got together, he was literally like my best friend. We can finish each other's sentences. And to me, you know, again, I probably shouldn't say this at work, but he really turns me on. So I told him one day, I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy me a house, and I'm going to buy me a house with a basement. I said, and I'm just going to put you in the basement and make you my sex slave. And he going to say, can I have ESPN? I said, you a slave. Slaves don't get requests. You know what I'm saying? But, like, that's like, you know, we vibe. You know, he was like, hey, if I got to be a slave, can I at least watch television? Yes. That's what I when, that's I, when right. I got my house in Long Beach. And, you know, I moved into my house in May. I'm so blessed. I mean, in February, and now we live together. And one of the first things I did when I moved in, I called the cable company. Excuse me, I need ESPN. Okay, give me some ESPN right now.
Yeah.
Sorry,
that's
I'm sorry.
Right.
We're going to edit that out.
Yeah. And
TMI.
You know, one thing about that is that you both were providing a specific need that each one says, okay, this is important for me, and this is what I need. And so, you know, by you providing that sports channel, that even made it more enticing because it made him feel wanted and needed and cared for. So, you know, he understood that, okay, I don't care if we got to go at it 20 times a day. As long as I have time to watch my sports and relax for a little bit, I'm good, because, you know, it all goes around with supporting each other's needs and
exactly.
making each other feel cared for and wanted. And, you know, I love that. I love it a lot. I love it a lot because I know that when my husband and I first got together, you know, we were at it so many times a day and night. You know, he's active duty in the Navy, so, you know, he would even come home off the ship during break time. And but you know, the thing about it is that, you know, I knew about the food because I love to cook, and so I knew that he loved for me to cook for him. So it didn't matter. I knew what time he was coming home off the ship for lunch. So, you know, I had lunch ready and available.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was satisfied and taken care of. I was satisfied and taken care of. But, you know, he went back to work. And see, you know, all of that goes into building and trusting and knowing what you have, what you want, what is so important to each other, and, you know, just building up on that 100% love, that satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to domestic violence, I always tell everyone that there is no love, there is no satisfaction, because you cannot be satisfied and being beaten every day, and you cannot be loved properly if you're being beaten every day. And it doesn't have to be the physical beating, but it could be the emotional and the psychological beating, and it can also be the sexual violence. And
yes.
And so you have to understand your boundaries and set them. Everyone, set your boundaries. Know what you want. Know what you're not going to accept. And put it out there. If he's the one for you and he understands that and he wants to be with you, he will appreciate you setting those boundaries and letting him know what you want and what you don't want and what you will not accept. And then you can love each other properly. And I also created a program. It's a men program. And in the program, it is created to enhance and to improve how men see themselves and how to handle emotions, anger, and problem solving, and how to love correctly. Because if some men that have the low self-esteem, for example, like I say, that come from the broken womb, that come from the family of violence, that comes from a generational curse, because some of this stuff is generationally passed down, they see themselves as someone that's not worthy, someone who can't love, and someone who don't know what love is. And so when you are with someone who's emotionally broken and damaged like that, that's full of anger, then that person has the ability to go into a rage, and that is a rage of violence as well as a rage of murder. And so my organization focuses on decreasing, and hopefully we can stop all violence around the world and stop these murders related to domestic violence.
Absolutely. Now, we have gone, because of the conversation, we've gone over a little bit from our first commercial, well, from a commercial break. I do have to stop. I'm going to take a brief commercial break. I didn't play as many commercials as we normally do, but we're going to stop for a commercial break, and we will be right back.
I'm Joseph Collins, CEO of Punch TV Studios. Growing up in South Central Los Angeles, my mother was on welfare. She fought day and night to get off welfare and give her children a better life. She would always say to me, "Son, this is the best that I can do, but you can do better." And I promised that I would do better and that I would be the catalyst for change in our community. Just like I promise you that together we can build a multi-billion dollar media company that brings wealth back to our community, that resurrects blighted areas and puts people back to work. Be part of the promise. Be part of change. Invest in Punch TV Studios for only $1 per share. Call now, 310-419-5914. That's 310-419-5914. Or visit our website at punchtvstudios.com.
Yes, thank you for allowing us that brief commercial break. I think I'm going to relabel this show and call it All Sharifa's Personal Business, because I just put all my personal business out there today on this show. But I did it for a reason. And when I do my speaking engagements and I talk, I always tell people that everything that I went through was not for me. It was for me to help someone else. So if any of my story I laugh, I share, can help and benefit somebody else, that's why I'm opening up, because people are always think that domestic violence or abuse only happens to certain people. It only happens to weak people, and it doesn't. It has the potential to happen to anyone. And I have never, ever blamed anyone who suffered from domestic violence. But I also know that we have the ability to make choices, and we can decide when to stay and when to go, and sometimes it's just time to go and leave. I've always been one of those women. Some women need to learn how to leave. I need to learn how to stay, because life is so wonderful. It's so beautiful. It's so good. God is so good that I'm like, hey, let me see what's out there. Let me move on. So I just wanted to share and open up Ms. Christy Johnson from the founder of Finding Your Destiny, Inc., a nonprofit domestic violence and suicide prevention organization, has blessed us with an hour of her time, and I am just truly grateful. And you were wonderful enough to share your story, and I didn't want to gloss over it. I just wanted to stop for a break real quick. And one of the things that I really like about you is that you are willing to stand in your truth, because you spoke about your grandmother, you spoke about your mother, and you spoke about your uncle. And what many people, first of all, God bless you. You know, I'm sorry that even happened to you, so I am sorry to hear that. But the same way you relayed what happened to you, there are many people who, if you would tell them, my grandmother beat me, they would just say, oh, that's old school, that's what we used to do, and they minimize the abuse that you received. When you talk about your uncle trying to rape you, most people are like, shh, don't talk about it, especially in our community. They consider it airing their dirty laundry, and there are more people who would be, in my opinion, again, everything I say on this show is the world according to Sharifa, they would have said, oh, that's just things happen, don't say anything, is, you know, but they don't call it abuse. And me personally, one of the things that I've always wanted to happen is for more people to call an ace an ace and a spade is abuse, and there's nobody who has to deal with it or put up with it or deserve it. So I am so proud of you, so proud of you even today for standing up for yourself and saying, I'm going to call the police. My daughter right now is 23, and I've always told her, never be in a domestic, I mean, in an abusive relationship. I said, if a guy ever tries to abuse you, walk away. My daughter is so funny and so strong. She was like, if the guy ever tried to hit me, I'm going to hit him back. I said, okay, but after you hit him back, can you leave? Like, that's all I'm saying. Like, you, no matter what, you don't want to be sitting there hitting and hitting and hitting and hitting. That's not love. You know, so if you get one good hit in, I got you, but don't stay. That's where I am with the whole situation. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And, you know, I like that you say that, you know, that you always spoke to your daughter about violence as well, because I did the same thing. After leaving the 18 years of that I call hell, when I started to have my children, my oldest daughter, Destiny, the one who was murdered in a domestic violence relationship and hung in a closet by her abuser, I always told her about what domestic violence was, and I told her about if a guy do this, if a guy do that, you know, that that's violent, and that, you know, you need to report, you need to get away, and, you know, not to accept it and be in those type of relationships. But, you know, what I learned after I had went to heaven, after Destiny was murdered, God took me up to heaven to show me that he had answered my prayers. And when I spoke to Destiny in heaven, and she told me, she said, Mom, she said that, you know, she said, Mom, she said, I know that you told me. I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry. But she said that, you know, what I didn't know and didn't understand was the cycle. And she says that, I know you told me if he do this, or, you know, if they steal from you, if they beat you, if they curse you, if they call you this, if, you know, if they threaten you, if they do this. But she said, Mom, she said, I didn't know. I just didn't know. And I told her, I said, Destiny, I said, I know you didn't know. I don't blame you at all, and I forgive you. Because I wanted her to understand that I forgive you for the mistake you made, either the mistake of not fully listening to what I said and you wanted to date this person, or either fully not really truly understanding. And it could have been a combination of both, but what I wanted her to know was that it wasn't your fault. I don't blame you at all. Mm-hmm. And so the work that I do, number one, because God asked me to, and number two, because of the amount of love and respect that I have for my daughter. And so that's why I fight this cause on a national and on an international base, because it affects every human being. It doesn't matter your age, color, race, creed, background, your sexual orientation. I've even spoken to doctors who have told me that they've been abused, and I've even spoken to an attorney that says that she's in one currently. See, so, you know, it doesn't matter your educational status. And I know that back in the day it used to say that it only affected those who were homeless at the time, because most of them didn't really have anywhere to go. And they also say that it affected those who were uneducated, the ones who didn't finish middle school, high school, or, you know, those who didn't get a secondary degree. But now in today's world, it doesn't have an education on it, doesn't have a race or an age.
Absolutely. Amen. So even speaking about your daughter, and wow, you blowing me away this morning, and I am definitely sorry to hear that, but I know that you were able to save lives and that you are able to save other people and to help other people by sharing with them your experiences and the experiences that of your daughter. So helping other people is definitely, I mean, your organization. Where can people find out more information about your organization if they need someone to talk to, someone to go to? Where can they find out more information?
Yes, they can definitely go to my website, which is www.finding, that is FINDING, your, YOUR, Destiny, DESTINY .org. So that's findingyourdestiny.org.
Okay, you heard it here, findingyourdestiny.org. please, people, if you have any questions, if you even want to know about domestic violence, please go to findingyourdestiny.org. Take a look at their information. Take a look at their resources, because there is help out there. There are people out there that care. In all of my stories, everything that I've gone through all my life, I always try to tell people that that allows me to empathize with other people. I've walked in those shoes. Mm-hmm. I've been there in a lot of different situations. And there, you know, we always feel, and again, that's an intentional thing. That's what the abusers want to do. They want to isolate you. So you feel isolated. You feel like nobody cares, like nobody understands. If I want to go talk to somebody, if I'm trying to tell them that this feels like abuse, that they're just going to tell me, no, he's a wonderful guy. And the thing is, and the one thing that I've learned, and again, this is my experience, is that some abusers have the most friends or the best time, and everybody loves them. And nobody, you know, they may be in the church and a lot of different things. And so people, you would think that nobody would really believe that this person is abusing you. And like I always tell people is I don't care who believes what. It's about what works for me, what I think I deserve. And that's what has always been my guiding light or what guides me through my life. I talk about my life. I always tell people my life is an open book, only because mm-hmm. the information that I want to give is I'm doing it deliberately and specifically to help someone else. When I had my two children, I knew that my ex-husband, their father, wanted to keep me pregnant and at home. I went to the doctors. I was like 22 years old, and I told him I want a tubal ligation. Caucasian Jewish doctor told me, you too young to have a tubal ligation. I'm not going to do it. I said, okay, refer me to somebody else. Went to another one, Caucasian male doctor. He said, you too young. You might change your mind. I'm not going to do it. I said, okay, refer me to somebody else. I said, I will go through every doctor in this hospital, or I will tie them myself. Because when I, you know, because I want, this is the surgery, the procedure that I want. So he referred me to somebody else, and it just so happened, nothing to do with my doing, but the third doctor was an African-American female. And she said, Sharifa, you're too young. We really don't do this for people under 30 because you might change your mind, but tell me why you want to have this surgery. I said, well, when I first started having kids, nobody wanted me to have them. Now nobody don't want me to stop. So if you're not going to tie them, refer me to somebody else. And she was like, you know, I heard what you have to say. You sound like you got a good head on your shoulders. I'll tie them, okay, where I need to be and when. Because, like I said, if you ain't going to tie them, I'll tie them. That's where we at. So, again, this is information that I share with people because I'm not recommending people go out and sterilize themselves and all kind of yada, yada. But what I'm saying is sometimes you have to make the best decisions for you. And professionals, people with degrees, they can tell you whatever they want to tell you. But at the end of the day, you are the only one who has to live with the choices and the decisions that you make.
Yes, and you know, you said that very, very well. And, you know, I commend you on making sure that you are preventing yourself from being locked down into this dangerous relationship and continuing having children. I commend you on that. And by me being a registered nurse, and labor and delivery is my specialty because I delivered babies. And then I also worked on the other side of the gynecology side. And so I would see women who would want to have, like you say, detubal ligations done. And I'm not backing up what the doctors were saying on the age, you know, where the age limit is, but medically, in medical terms for insurance purposes as well as for, you know, lawsuits, a lot of doctors are not allowed to do those early tubal ligations on women that are still in their 20s, and that is due to, you know, they might want to get it reversed. Well, you know, you're going to have complications with that as well. But it also goes with the immaturity of the mindset at that time, because later on you might want to have children. But I also say that, you know, any type of birth control that you can get on to prevent yourself from being locked down into those being barefoot and pregnant relationships or marriages, do it, because the most important thing is going to be your health, your body, and how you feel. And you don't want to bring children into a broken, damaged environment. And so I love that you were persistent on making sure that you prevented the environment that could have brought along some damaged children. And so I love it. And that was, oh gosh, that was the bravest thing that you have, you know, open up to a lot of women that are stuck in those situations who want to have those procedures but are afraid, or that's being stopped by the medical facilities or the medical providers. I love it. I love it. I love it.
You can't stop me. When I want something, you can't stop me. Go ahead. But I'm just saying, you can't. When I want, that's why we're going to close out this IPO October for $50 million, because when I set my mind to something, everything in the universe comes around to make you happy. You're not going to stop me. If you close the front door, I'm going in the window, best believe. And I'm calling a bottle of use and a bottle of use for me. And I'm like, y'all got me? Because we going in. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but go ahead.
Yes, yeah. And so that's why I enjoy helping women, children, and teens live better, become successful, and empower individuals. That's why I tell every person that I encounter and that I work with and that I speak to that don't ever give up on who you are, because you have not met your destiny yet. Your destiny has not been fulfilled. There's so much out there for you. So make sure that you do what it takes so that when it's time for you to leave this earth, and I tell them, I only want you to leave this earth only when it's a natural cause, when God say it's time, and that is when God says that job well done, you can rest now. I don't want you leaving this earth from any other type of situation that is related to violence. None of it. None of it. And I also want everyone to understand that October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And so my daughter, Destiny, her birth is October 6th. And here in the state of Maryland, and I'm opening this up for an international movement so that everyone, no matter where you are, that you can celebrate someone who has been murdered by domestic violence. This includes women, men, and children. So we are opening up heaven on October 6th, and we are celebrating every person that has lost their life to this senseless, idiotic thing known as domestic violence. And the messages we are sending to them in heaven is that it wasn't their fault, that we love them, and we are sending everlasting love and peace to every person that has been taken from us by domestic violence.
Yes,
I totally agree. I did want to put my little bit of 2 cents in. This is a bottle of use for me. I lived through 2 very abusive marriages. I'm on my 3rd beautiful marriage with a bottle of use. And I do understand getting that tubal ligation. My last pregnancy, my 20-year-old, I was being so bad that the security of the hospital came to remove my ex-husband. And I told him, I said, no, this is his son. He can be here too. So this is a topic that's very, very close to my heart. My first marriage, the day after I found out I was pregnant with my first child, I was choked out and left on the floor for a week and didn't even realize I was missing for a week until I woke up and called my family. And they said, where have you been for a whole week? I knew I'd been there for a while, of course, I could tell. But, yes, this is definitely a topic that comes very close to my heart. I was able to leave those 2 abusive relationships. And unfortunately, when I got with my 3rd husband, in my 30s and wanted to have a child, I had experienced a tubal ligation and went through the reversal and was still unable to have children with the love of my life. But I love everything you're doing, Miss Christie, and I can't thank you enough for being on today, and my husband wants to put his two cents in.
Yeah, I actually want to speak to the men. I don't see a reason where you need to fight a woman ever. You know, they can upset you. In so many different ways, but you can always walk away. And from a law enforcement point of view, I do want women to know that there are procedures that you can do when you go down to the magistrate to get that person out of your house that you are afraid of, that you may feel they may harm yourself or your children. And that's called a protection order. And you can get that, and they'll do it if it's on a Friday. It'll last till Monday, at least the court, and then to get another 7 days to a year. So, and I've seen some that are on to 2 or 3 years. So, there is help through the justice. Don't always get it right. A lot of times the police officers get it wrong when they come to the houses. I was a police officer. I've seen it done. I've seen it happen. And we're taught to mediate. And a lot of times when you go to mediate in these situations of domestic violence, most cops don't want to tell anyone in there that they should leave the relationship. However, I think that's one of the best things police officers can do. I mean, if you are policing the community, that means you're policing relationships as well. And if you see two folks that are together that you know it's going to come to a tragic end or it's going to be a lot of hurt in that relationship, I believe a police officer should tell the woman or the man that you guys need to either seek help with counseling or go ahead and separate and, find someone else that you actually could love. So, if there's any guys out there that's upset that I'm talking about them, I'm a bottle youth, you can come talk to me, and I don't mind opening a bottle youth on you. So
that didn't sound like a bottle of youth that she was. That sounded like a veiled threat about a youth. I'm just saying that's what I heard, but I'm not saying that's what you said.
Nope.
I'm just saying.
I've always told people,
I just want to say this.
If they have that kind of problem, they can come see me.
Yes. Okay, but this is what I want to say. But I just want to respond to that real quick. When about you said about the police officers, and I agree, but one of the things that I want to point out and also has been my experience is that even when police officers or other people or government officials or other, whoever it is, comes into a marriage, I know people personally, at least one couple, where the guy was beating her. The police stepped in and told her and said everything, and she started going off on the police and beating the police because of the situation. And this was her husband, and it's like, okay, he beating you, and you trying to beat the police.
Yes, and now they do that because the victim always feel that they have to protect the abuser, because this is one thing that the bottle of youth can verify, is that when the abuser gets sent away and get locked up, when he gets out, that the abuse is going to be worse. And so at that point in time that they have to defend that man, no matter what they got to do, what they got to say, they will fight whoever they have to fight at that moment in time, because if he gets taken out of here, oh, my God, something worse is going to happen to that victim. And so and they have that defense mechanism. All victims have it. For some unknown reason, they will protect the abuser.
In 1997, domestic laws, violence laws changed, and it was made such as that when you came to a house of domestic violence, somebody is going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it was supposed to have been, and that's why they had created that law in 1997 to protect those things from happening after the police officers left the house, that the male or the female came back to the house. So we usually gave them an option. Either you're leaving now while we're here on your own, or you're leaving with me.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in those instances,
sometimes is not about the law. It's about the women sometimes will say and do anything to keep him from going. Is the fear is one thing, but also sometimes these guys are paying all the bills. Sometimes, you know, they don't have anywhere to go. This, you know, or even the this is my child's father. I don't want my children to see their father go to jail. These are the people, no matter what the law says, that will say and do anything. The women who are trying to keep him in the house.
Yes, and see, that goes back to that.
I completely understand. However, the law itself, you must remember, is governed by men. And until we get enough men in D.C., to make sure that these laws are equal, that's going to continue to happen because the females aren't going to feel safe enough with just the laws currently in place.
Amen.
Yes.
Hallelujah. Ms. Johnson, we're going to give you a few
minutes. Exactly what I was going to touch on is recreating laws and writing laws that we know that cannot be changed, because domestic violence is now an epidemic. And if we do not do something about the rate of violence and murders that are occurring, that we're going to have more deaths related to domestic violence, as well as the family domestic violence suicide, where the abuser murders the whole family, including children, and sometimes the fathers and mothers, and then they will murder themselves. We need to stop all of this. And this is something that my organization is now working on as well. I have partnered with a great, great guy. He's a family man. He's married. He has children. He has witnessed domestic violence in his family as well. And so he's a retired chief from the Navy. And the good thing about him is that he's coming in with the mindset of seeing what's happening right in front of everyone's face. He's not a political person that has ran for any political office before, but he's also running for state senate in Prince George's County, District 24. And so I'm telling you, we need to get these type of individuals that are world travelers, that have experienced various types of abuses, that has seen these type of abuses, as well as, you know, protecting our families and creating new laws, and someone that understands the ways of writing laws and speaking on behalf of victims. And so he does great, great presentation work, as well as we are working with him. His name is Everett Browning of Prince George's County here in the state of Maryland, District 24. And we are working to create a whole various amount of laws and new actions that can be here to protect us when we call 911, including making sure that these police officers are trained on what domestic violence is and how to figure out if the victim is actually being abused, because what they look at is, I don't see any abuse. I don't see any black eyes right now. I don't see any busted lips. All the time, you're not going to see it immediately, because we have what's known as a blood clotting factor. And if he doesn't hit a clot or vessel at that moment, it occurs later, probably 2 or 3 hours later. But at that point in time, when this victim is calling, we need to be able to act and provide the type of services needed for protection.
Amen.
And
hallelujah.
And my daughter, Destiny, she was murdered 4 hours after receiving her protective order. And so what her abuser did was, he had tracking devices installed on her cell phone as well as on her laptop. And so she was a college student as well. And so he would also track her into which classes she was at on campus. And he would assault her on campus as well. He was stalking. He was harassing. And so he was also intimidating and threatening. And see, all of these factors are things that we need to make sure that we are including in these bills that is going to be passed, because when they install these tracking devices, they can find you anywhere. And so we need to be able to make sure that we have laws in place that if they install tracking devices on anybody's laptop, anybody's cell phone, including the victim's cars, that that is a felony charge and they serve time for this. We need to get them off the streets ASAP.
What happened to him? What happened to your daughter's abuser?
Well, the justice system here did nothing. They allowed him to walk free. And
he
Yes. He walked free. He did not serve a day of charges or time or anything for murdering my daughter, even with all the evidence, even with her having the protective order in place. And
what
so what he did was
sorry, well, I'm excited. I'm listening.
Yeah. Well, because I found her hanging and she lived with us at the time, the murderer says that it wasn't him, that she committed suicide. And so what he did was, because he had access to her laptop, he would break in and go in and recreate emails and recreate letters and, you know, type up crazy stuff. And so this is stuff that he had brought to the courthouse. And so, you know, to him, he proclaimed he was trying to save her, in which he wasn't trying to save her at all, because I heard him 24 hours before say that he is going to kill her. I heard him say this, and God knows I'm not lying. I heard him say this out of his mouth. And so along with the other things that he had done, they did nothing about it. And
I am
sorry
to hear that.
No, thank you. He murdered another woman a year ago. And so he murdered this woman and beat her so bad, he beat her with a hammer. And so this is how wonderful God is, because throughout this time, I could see him. I could be face-to-face with him. I could be in a grocery store. I could be, you know, at Walmart. I could just be anywhere. And I knew that he was following me around. But the thing about it is that every time I would go back to the courthouse to file charges to get a protective order for myself, they would deny it, stating that I don't have enough evidence. And so they were allowing him to, you know, walk around as if he was unbeatable, that he could continue to harass women and destroy families and nothing would happen to him. And the most wonderful thing about it is that during this time, you know, I wanted to do something to him so badly. I wanted to murder him myself. That's what was on my mind. And so God told me that I've already answered your prayers not to do it. And the one thing about it is that I know that the enemy was trying to place me in an unawkward position to where I did something, because there's no way for me to be over here at one location and then you're at the same location I'm at. That just doesn't work like that automatically. And so he was strategically placing himself in various locations to where he knew I was at, because he was stalking me. And they did nothing about it. And so when
wow.
he murdered the second woman, God made him call 911 and turn himself in. And so that was justice for me in my heart and in my mindset, was that he was finally off the street. And so for the second murder, they gave him 50 years in jail, in prison, 50 years in prison. And
wow.
So it goes into, you know, we have to get these laws written properly so that victims like myself, you know, family members and other victims that are dealing with these stalking behaviors and that are being harassed by these abusers and murderers, that we could be protected as well.
Wow. I just want to thank you, Ms. Johnson, for being a guest on today's episode of Changing the Conversation. We went over about 13 minutes longer than is allocated, but what we were talking about, what you were speaking about, was way too important for us to confine it to just an hour. So I want to thank you for being a guest today. God bless you for everything that you're doing for everyone else. It's been an honor to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate the bottle of youth. And, you know, sometimes we need that male perspective to come in, because a lot of men, they dishonor each other and disassociate with each other due to various type of, they just don't know how to associate with men. But what I love about what he said was that it's important for men to understand that violence is violence, and that they shouldn't abuse women at all. And so no matter what the situation is, walk away, get out, do not hit a woman, do not do anything that is violent toward a woman. And violent also includes the verbal and sexual assaults and mental abuse. So I love it, I love it, I love it. And I also want to say to Mrs. Bottle of Youth that I am so happy that you are now in a love and caring relationship. And this is what I also love, is that we could turn that victimology around into a success. And so I want every woman out there that has been a victim of this type of nastiness to understand that you can live good and you can find a loving man who will love you and care for you. And so thank both of you for being on and for speaking. And that I want everyone to know that destiny says that she loves you, and not to give up, because it's your life. No one has control over your life. And you can also reach me at findingyourdestiny.org. And if you are looking for anyone to teach domestic violence classes, anyone for motivational speaking, you can reach out to me. I love what I do. I believe in it. And my cause is an international cause, and I am climbing mountains and I'm flying skies to save lives.
Amen. God bless. I believe Ms. Johnson said it best. Until next time, we are out.
Thank you for listening to Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. Tune in Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time as we continue to change the conversation in contemporary media. To be a guest or to share your thoughts on changing the conversation, visit Nabuki.com today. Don't miss out on the opportunity to be a part of the company that's revolutionizing media. Visit PunchTVStudios.com to become a part owner at $1 per share.